This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 66.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we interview ultramarathon man Dean Karnazes. And for this episode's quick tip, Angie answers a listener question about post-run refueling. And to get specialized help in your marathon training, become a member of the Academy by visiting our website, marathontrainingacademy.com. So Angie, you just recently cranked out a 20-mile long run. How was that?
It went pretty well. I mean, I'd taken the summer off and stepped back my mileage a little bit. Mm-hmm. So this was my first one for a couple of months. But yeah, it went well. The weather wasn't horribly hot. I had my handy-dandy hydration pack and got through it and had a good time.
So that was your first really long run with that pack on, wasn't it?
It was the first one over 16 miles.
Mm-hmm. So no chafing, everything worked great?
Yeah, everything went great. I mean, a little bit of sweating, but pretty much when I'm done with the long run anyway, there's not an inch of my body that's not sweaty, so...
And we've been talking about looking for a race in the month of October, which is coming up on us. So we just wanted to announce that we did find a race and sign up. It's called the Screaming Pumpkin Marathon in Peoria, Illinois. And Angie will tell you the details here.
Oh, I will, huh? Yeah, it looks like a really unique race. It kind of has a Halloween theme. It's towards the end of October, and it's on a Friday evening. So what you do is you try to predict your finishing time, and the goal is to finish as close to midnight as possible. So there's a staggered start. You start according to when you predict your finishing time will be, and you're not allowed to have a watch or a GPS device or phone on the course, you know, to help you judge your pace. And then a lot of people dress up in costumes, and the course goes through a cemetery. So it looks like a really unique race. I thought it would just be a lot of fun.
You know, and it's close to where we live.
Yeah, it's about 5 hours away.
Don't you have to loop through like 6 times?
I believe you loop 4 times. And it's pretty hilly. And, you know, of course, it's going to be in the dark. So that's going to be new for me as well. Haven't run a marathon in the dark yet. So that gives us a good excuse to buy headlamps now and practice with those for our debut night marathon.
Yeah, I don't know what people think when I tell them that we paid $125 each to drive 5 hours away and run through a cemetery till midnight.
Well, runners will do crazy things. Actually, that was another thing. The swag was really good. You get a technical race t-shirt.
A headband, a long sleeve jacket, right?
Yeah, you get a...
Well, all jackets are long sleeve.
Right.
I got a long sleeve jacket.
Yeah, technical jacket, a technical shirt.
A medal, of course.
Medal. There was just, you know, a few different elements. It looked like it was really neat. In fact, on the comments section, it says some people will sign up for the marathon just to get the swag and then not do the race. So.
Well, there isn't a half marathon option anyway, so it's either a 10K or a relay or a marathon. There's no half.
So, drum roll, please.
So I'm running the full marathon, even though I'd be a lot more comfortable running the half as far as my training goes. But I'm just going to kind of run, walk. No, I'm not going to get done very fast, but...
You'll do great. Yeah, I think a run, walk method would work pretty well. I mean, you're going to be tired afterward, but That's to be expected when you do a marathon.
So some of you might remember, I ran my first ever marathon with Angie's help back in October of last year. And I'm currently training for another marathon in February, but this one... up here in Peoria, Illinois. It's a little bit unexpected, but I'm just going to go out and do it, kind of run, walk, and crawl, whatever it takes.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. A marathon 1 year after your last one. So it only took 1 year for the amnesia to set in, huh?
Yeah. Well, I've done some halves in between.
Oh, yeah, and you've got one coming up in a couple of days, actually, too.
Yeah, I do. But I haven't ran, like, over 15 miles in a long time. So here goes nothing.
You'll do it.
And after talking with Dean Karnazes, I realized that, you know, I have no excuse. And if he can run all the miles that he can, I could definitely go out there and conquer this marathon next month.
Yeah, his latest book was really inspiring. And after we both read it, I noticed that you're talking about adventures increased, and you were definitely inspired by it, too.
Yeah, it's really awesome after reading a book to get to interview the author. And many of you have probably heard of Dean Karnazes. He's probably one of the most famous runners in the world right now. And it's just a real honor that he came on our podcast and we talked to him for about 30 minutes. And just a real down-to-earth, gracious guy. And I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation that we had with him. We're going to talk about his newest book and some of the stories, like the Four Deserts race. And we're going to ask him questions about his training strategies, his fueling, his diet, his injury prevention, his recovery, where he draws motivation from, and all kinds of good stuff. And he really throws down the tips in this interview. So we will get into it in just a moment. Before we do, Angie wants to read some emails that she received recently. And these are from two ladies, both named Jane. And we didn't really like do that on purpose.
No, I was picking emails to read, and I just picked these two because they really kind of spoke to me. And then I realized both ladies were named Jane, which ironically they're spelled different, but so it was meant to be, I think.
All right, so let's hear from the two Janes.
All right, first one says, "Hi, Angie. I came across your podcast and have enjoyed listening to it during my runs. I'm not training for a marathon, but will do a few fun runs this year. I did my first on Mother's Day and am very proud as I only decided to start running in February of this year. I started running mainly for health reasons. I have lupus and hypertension because of it. I want to stay healthy because of my two young kids, 7 years old and 20 months. Who knows, I might train for a marathon in the next couple of years. Again, thanks for your podcast, and I love listening to your calming voice when I run." She puts in parentheses, "very slow." And that's from Jane.
That's okay. No one says you have to run fast. I mean, running's running, right?
That's right. Important thing is that you're doing it.
So right on, Jane, and keep up the good work, and you just never know where running's going to take you.
That's for sure.
And let's hear from Jane number two.
All right. It says, "Dear Angie and Trevor, I started listening to your podcast in the fall of 2011, and you've accompanied me on many of my long runs. I have found it such a gift that you continue to make down-to-earth episodes packed with laughs, inspirational stories, and practical tips. First and foremost, I cannot thank you enough for your motto that you have what it takes to run a marathon. Not long ago, if someone had asked me if I had what it takes to run, I would have absolutely said no. I'm one of the last people who would ever think that I had the ability to take on endurance running. Your podcast taught me lessons I couldn't get anywhere else and gave me faith in myself that I didn't know was there. I did run a half marathon in June, along with two other races this season, and I have another half scheduled soon. I have also made it my mission to promote active lifestyles for children that I work with and the people in my life that I care about. I made a promise to run for the rest of my life, and I hope to have your podcast by my side for many years. Thank you."
Wow, that's great. And congratulations on running the half marathon and signing up for the other one. Sounds like she's on a roll.
And I know that she's being inspirational to people in her life and the children she works with. I think that's wonderful. Pass it on.
Definitely. Just want to say congratulations to all of you who are taking action and changing your lives. And we are glad we can be on this journey with you. And without further ado, let's talk to Dean.
Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way.
All right, we're on the podcast today with Dean Karnazes. He is a world-renowned ultra runner and a New York Times best-selling author. His running accomplishments include winning the Badwater 135, racing on all seven continents, running 350 continuous miles without sleep, and numerous other feats of endurance. And his newest book is called Run, 26.2 Stories of Blisters and Bliss. And Angie and I have just recently read that book, and it is a very inspirational book. Dean, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for that very gracious introduction. I'll tell you, I am not worthy, but I really appreciate it. It's great to be here.
In the book, you talk about many of the amazing running adventures that you've had, and one of these involved completing in the Four Deserts foot race. Can you tell our listeners briefly about what this race entails?
Well, I'll tell you, it entails lots of misery and pain. That's why I love it. But the Four Deserts Challenge is four of the most grueling foot races in the world. And I tried to do them all in 1 year. So no one had ever completed all four of these challenges in 1 year. And the first one is in the Atacama Desert in Chile, which is the driest place on Earth. So the place we ran, get this, there's been no recorded rain ever. There's never recorded a drop of rain. And these are 6 day, so they're multi-day self-supported events. So you've got to carry everything you need with you for 6 days. You're basically provided with a tent at night. So they're quite grueling. And again, you're self-reliant, which I kind of like, and you're running with a pack. So you've got some weight on as well. The second race was in the Gobi Desert in Central Asia. And I'll never forget the temperature fluctuations. One day, the temperature changed 75 degrees during the course of one day.
Wow.
So it can be really, really cold, get really, really hot, and then get really, really cold again very quickly. So that was the Gobi Desert. The third race is across the Sahara, which you're basically, you know, post-hauling in sand for 6 days, hot sand. It got up to about 110 degrees, so very hot sand. And then the final race is in Antarctica, which is actually a desert. People don't realize, because there's snow there, that there's a desert, but it's actually a very dry in Antarctica. It's just cold, so it's a cold desert. And I was able to complete all four of those in 1 year, and that's the four deserts challenge.
And that's probably my favorite part of the book, is when you go through it, and several chapters in the book, when you go through those challenges. So you were the first person to complete all four in a year. Is that right?
Yep. Other people have completed all four of the events over multiple years.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of folks thought at first it couldn't be done, just because the recovery in between the two and the travel and so forth, it would be not possible to run all four of those in 1 year.
Yeah. Awesome. In the book, I also like the fact that you write about some of your failures. For example, your first two attempts at Leadville, the Leadville 100 Ultra Trail Run, and you actually call it Dreadville in the book. But your first two attempts were unsuccessful, but your third attempt was successful. And so we want to ask you, why did you struggle so much at this race?
There are a couple of reasons. Leadville has become a very popular, I know, but popular is a relative term in ultra marathoning. So it's one of the bigger ultra marathons. And when I say bigger, I mean it's a couple hundred people. It's nowhere close to something like, the New York City marathon, where there's, tens of thousands. But it's become a popular race, and it's in Colorado, in the Rockies, and at elevation. So the race starts in a town called Leadville, a quaint little town in the Rockies that just happens to be about 10,400 feet above sea level. So you're basically, you're starting at 10,000 feet. You rarely drop below 10,000 feet, and you end up climbing over Hope Pass, which goes up above 12,000 feet. And, I had flown in from San Francisco the day before just thinking, oh yeah, with my level of endurance, I'll just pop out of the plane and just crush this race.
Mm.
Well, it was a good humbling experience. The race crushed me. I pretty much ended up with, almost getting what they call HACE, which is high altitude cerebral edema, at mile 80. So I was going just fine. All of a sudden I came around a corner and started seeing double. And I had to drop out of the race, and my crew was instructed to drive me down to Denver to, lower elevation immediately. And that's how I spent my first race. The second race, I said, I got to go back and finish this thing. So I went back and trained at altitude, and I was well acclimated, but took a fall and ripped open my knee, and that kind of derailed that second effort. And as they say, three's a charm. So I thought, I have to go get one of these belt buckles. And the buckle you get for finishing many of these 100-mile races is very ornate. It looks like a rodeo buckle.
Mm-hmm.
And the genesis of the buckle is that the first 100-mile foot race ever run was a race called the Western States 100-mile Endurance Run. And prior to that race, it was a horse race. And as legend has it, 1 year, one of the racers, his horse, went lame about a week before the start of this race, and he had trained diligently all year. He was in great physical condition, and he just announced, I still really want to do this race. And I said, well, how are you going to do it, Gordy? And he said, I'm just going to run. I don't have a horse, so I'm going to run it. And he actually made it 100 miles, to the amazement of everyone who was there racing with horses. And I thought, we got to give this poor guy something, and they didn't have anything except, these belt buckles that you got for finishing the horse race. So that's how getting a belt buckle has become the prize for finishing these 100-mile trail races.
And in that same chapter, you talked about hurting your knee and then going to the doctor. And he basically said, you need to stop running, and your knee is horrible. And then in the next sentence he said, so I celebrated by going out for a run.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. He gave me some samples of drugs to take, you know, some anti-inflammatory or something, and I just, you know, he said, don't run. I walked out of his office. I threw the, you know, the pills in the trash can, and I ran home. So, you know, he didn't, you know, I would say don't listen to what I do, though. You'll listen to everyone, follow no one. That was just kind of where my head was at. But, you know, listen to your doctor, people.
Now, people may look at all you've accomplished and may get discouraged because they don't have, you know, a bulletproof body. Do you have any advice for injury-prone runners who still want to accomplish big goals?
Yeah, I certainly do. And, you know, the first thing I would say is, you know, you don't have to be me. I'm just doing what I love to do. And I tell people all the time, be the best you that you can be. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm trying to do is best, you know, be the best Dean that Dean can be. And, you know, thankfully I've got time to train and prepare, and it's kind of become my vocation, this crazy running thing. You know, other people have real lives, if you will. They've got jobs, they've got families, they've got obligations. And, you know, they can't put in the time and the training. And to me, I say it's still worth it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to go out and run, you know, a sub 3-hour marathon. Just go finish. We all cross that same finish line. So do the best that you can do and have that mindset. And I think that'll propel you on when things really start to hurt. But the other thing I advocate is cross training. I am a big proponent of cross training, for injury prevention. I think too many runners, just run. And I think that if you just run and you start, you know, boosting your mileage, that's kind of a recipe for injury. So I say, you know, develop your leg muscles through, you know, I like, doing other activities like, you know, riding a bike, mountain biking, or, you know, doing sets of push-ups and sit-ups to strengthen your upper body and your midsection. Because one thing that happens when you start loading up the miles is toward the end of a particularly long run, or especially with a marathon, like those last 6 miles, your form can really go to, you know, go out the window, and you can start doing, you know, getting kind of sloppy. Mm-hmm. And that's when you injure yourself. But if you've got good muscle tone, you can support all those, you know, the micro muscles that keep your joints and everything in alignment and prevent injury. So cross train a lot. I also tell people, don't sit down. Mm-hmm. I never sit down during the day. So I have my home office set up at waist level, and I do all my, you know, my writing when I type out books and such, standing up. Wow. You know, my conference calls right now, I'm standing as I talk with you guys. So I tell people, you know, get rid of that chair in your office, have your desk raised to waist level, and just spend all day on your feet. You know, take off your shoes, walk around in your socks or barefoot, and bounce up and down on your toes to condition your feet. You know, the minimalist footwear movement is so big now, and a lot of people say, I can't run in minimalist shoes. Well, I say, you know what, just take off your work shoes or your running shoes when you get home from a run and walk around barefoot. And just being barefoot and bouncing around on your toes will also help condition your feet. So I tell people, just never sit down. That's another way to gain some fitness, even though you're spending time in an office.
So what about your diet? Is that a big component of your training as well?
It is, and you know, I will say that people change. People change and they adapt, and that's certainly been my case. I mean, I will never live down the story. In my first book, I wrote about being stranded. I was trying to run a 200-mile race, and I was out in the middle of nowhere, on a backcountry road with no food and no crew. But I had a cell phone and a credit card, and I am. What does any, you know, enterprising young lad do? I ordered pizza. So I ordered takeout pizza delivered to me on the road. And I used to, you know, eat a lot of junk food. I just thought, you know, calories are good. Just any way you can get in calories. It didn't matter what they were composed of. Mm-hmm. But over the years, I've definitely refined my diet, and I've gone more to a diet that has very few processed foods in it, very few grains, so nothing, you know, that a caveman basically couldn't eat. You know, a caveman couldn't, you know, mill rice. He couldn't process wheat, so no bread. I don't need any sort of starchy products, really, except for vegetables and fruits. Lots of lean meat, lots of good monounsaturated fats from things like olive oil and nuts and avocado. So that's kind of how my my diet has evolved over the years, and I've really noticed an increase in my performance.
That's good. I think people sometimes get the image of you that you're running around with a rolled up pizza, eating it burrito style, and you know that you can eat anything you want just because you're an ultra runner. So I think that's interesting to hear you say that you find you have better performance the better that you eat.
I do, and I, you know, you could get away with eating whatever, you know, I could basically eat whatever I wanted, like you said, and I probably, you know, I wouldn't gain too much weight, but I think my performance would suffer, and I also think that my overall endurance would suffer. I noticed that throughout the day, I just now seem to have a lot more consistent energy. I don't have kind of the peaks and the troughs I used to have when my diet wasn't quite as clean. So I think that, you know, just overall energy is better, with a cleaner diet.
Now, do you have any tips for recovery for people? Do you do any daily maintenance to avoid injury or tightness or soreness? And has that amount of recovery changed over the last 20 years for you?
You know, again, I would say listen to everyone, follow no one. You know, people say you must do an inordinate amount of stretching, and the reality is that I don't stretch. I never stretch, and I don't find any benefit to it. There are other guys I run with that are elite runners that do a whole lot of stretching. They really see a benefit to it, so they stretch quite a bit. I don't stretch. I do find that, to me, active recovery is better than passive recovery, so I always try to follow up a long run with some sort of activity. I mean, you know, it's kind of counterintuitive for a lot of folks when they run a marathon. You know, that next day they're just absolutely hurting, and the last thing they want to do is go running. I say, you know, get out and run for a couple miles. I mean, even hobble. Just, you know, shuffle along for 2 or 3 miles. Just get the muscles moving again. You'll realize much quicker recovery. I'm also a big proponent of ice baths. So I tell people, you know, I know it's hard to do, but fill that bathtub of yours with ice water and just soak your legs for as long as you can. And I think that helps a lot. I also tell people to drink a lot of just plain, clean water after a big event. Literally carry around a water bottle with you all day the next day and just drink as much water as you can get in you. And I think that helps flush out some of the metabolic byproducts we produce when we run long distances.
Well, good stuff. Next question I have is, you've inspired many people to start running. What advice would you give the new runner on how to embrace the discomfort and not to dread it?
You know, that, I mean, I think that it's a paradigm shift. First of all, I mean, there's, you know, we, I think in Western society have kind of got things backwards. We thought that, you know, in the total absence of pain, if we had every comfort and convenience available to us, we'd be happy.
Right.
And I think we found in a lot of ways that we're so comfortable, we're miserable. There's no struggle. There's no pain, you know, left in our lives. I mean, we get in our air-conditioned cars. We drive to our air-conditioned office buildings. We get in a comfortable elevator. There's no suffering. And I tell people, you know, embrace the suffering. I have a famous quote that says there's magic in misery. And I think any runner can relate to that, right? I'm sure you guys can. We have some of our fondest moments, our most, lively moments, if you will, when we're in great pain and we're struggling for high achievement. So I would say first and foremost, don't try to avoid the pain, embrace the pain. And the other thing I would say, as a new runner, you know, go invest in a good pair of shoes. So start with the ground up. Go out to a nice specialty footwear store and work with a knowledgeable staff person to get you in some good shoes. And that'll, you know, do a couple things. One, you'll be more comfortable when you run. And two, if you're feeling lazy and uninspired, you'll look at these shoes in your closet and go, man, I spent all that money on these shoes and they're not getting put to use. So you'll feel compelled to get out there. And then I say, you know what, sign up for an event. Take the time and just look at, you know, even if it's 6 months down the road, and even if it's just a 5K, go online and sign up. And that way you've got a goal in front of you. And again, when you come home from work and you're feeling like, I'm just going to sit on the couch today and have some pizza and a beer, you'll know you've got this kind of ticking clock and there's this event coming up. And that'll compel you to get out the door and actually stick to your program. So those are some tips I give people, new runners.
That's great advice. I find your books all very entertaining and inspirational, but I'm curious, what are your favorite running books?
You know, there's one of my very favorites is a book called To the Edge. And it's kind of an obscure book. It was written by a guy that was actually a New York Times correspondent. And he had lost his brother tragically to suicide, and it caused him to reevaluate his whole life. And his brother was an endurance athlete, and he really wasn't much of an athlete at all. And so he took a 1-year sabbatical and said, you know what, I'm going to train and I'm going to try to run the world's toughest foot race, which is the race you spoke of, the Badwater 135-mile foot race across Death Valley. And the author, he did it. He trained, he prepared. It almost killed him, but he made it. And just that journey, that transformative journey over the course of a year, is really well documented. He was such an eloquent writer. And again, the name of the book is To the Edge. And I don't think it sold very many copies. And it might even be out of print, but you can still get it on Amazon. I really, really enjoyed that book. And, you know, the other thing is kind of the art of reading books has been lost over the years, right? I mean, as we move into the era of, you know, 144 character tweets, book reading is just not something we do a whole lot of anymore. One thing I love to do is listen to audiobooks.
Yes.
So I've got hundreds of audiobooks on my playlist, and it really makes a long training run go by quickly if you get into a good audiobook and you listen while you run.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. And I'm definitely going to check out that book that you recommended. It isn't one that I've read yet, so I'm a big reader and put that on my list.
Yeah, let the listeners know how you enjoyed it. I really think it's a great book.
So what are some of your favorite or essential pieces of running gear? Like you talked about running across the desert. I can't imagine how much extra gear you had to take.
Oh, lots of gear. And, you know, I've got a couple go-to pieces. One of my sponsors is a great company called The North Face. And they have some new technical wear called Flash Dry. And it's lightweight, wicking, and it dries so quickly if it gets wet. It's waterproof and it dries really, really quickly. So this new gear has, you know, the new clothing and apparel has really added to the level of comfort as far as, you know, not sweating too much and not overheating, but being warm and comfortable. Another piece that I like is a headlamp by a company called Petzl. So as ultra runners, we spend a lot of our time running at night. And one of the problems running at night is you get tunnel vision. You know, if you've got a headlamp on for hours and hours, they have a new headlamp that they call reactive technology that actually, it's almost like sonar that a bat uses. It sends out a signal to whatever in front of you, and it bounces back, and it adjusts the lighting based on what's the terrain like ahead, if it's open or if you're in a tree-lined area. That's really changed a lot of the dynamic of running at night. That's a great go-to piece. There's some Nathan hydration bottles, handheld bottles. I really like handheld bottles when I can. And some of the new Nathan handheld water bottles are really slick, and those are pieces I value.
Awesome. Now, how do you know if you're ready to run an ultra? I mean, is there a certain number of marathons that you should have under your belt first or a certain running base that a person needs?
I think you need to spend some time in an insane asylum, and after you get out of there, you qualify. you know, I think that more than mileage is mindset. You know, like with that, the race I referred to, the Western States 100-mile endurance run. Mm-hmm. They say that, you know, you run the first 50 miles with your legs and the next 50 miles with your mind. So I think it's more of a mindset and a mental toughness that lets you know you're ready for your first ultra marathon than total base mileage. You know, one thing that I would always recommend is at least running a marathon and then maybe trying a 50K race, which is 31 miles. So it's another, you know, few miles beyond a marathon. Try that as your first ultra and see how that goes. And, you know, the thing I tell people with their first ultra is you know, run a negative split, which is, you know, take the first half slower than the second half. You know, a good fit athlete can kind of fake their way through a marathon. I mean, if they're really, really hurting, they can just kind of crawl in those last, you know, 6 miles. With an ultra marathon, you know, if you're running a 100-mile foot race and you get to mile 60 or 65 and you're spent, you know, the odds of you being able to run another, you know, 35, 40 miles is pretty slight. So, you know, the consequences of going out too hard during an ultra marathon can be a DNF.
That's great advice. So I guess kind of that was my question. I'm kind of going through that in my mind. So I guess if I get my mindset in the right place, then there's nothing that can stop me.
Well, I just hope you like me after your first ultra.
I'm sure there'll be moments during it that I won't like you, but then I cross the finish line, you know, you'll be my best friend again.
Yeah, well, you know, define, you know, winning is just finishing the race. And that's kind of something I love about, you know, the ultra is that so many of the runners, you know, they follow the leaders, you know, the guys that are competitive like myself and certainly a lot of other really, really competitive ultra marathoners. But to them, you know, victory is finishing. Mm-hmm. It's a personal challenge. And to me, that's the real beauty of ultra running is that, you know, first or last, we're all crossing that same finish line. And to someone, you know, to run their first 50 or 100 mile race, it's an awakening, if you will. And I really like seeing that.
So in the end of the book, you talk about your goal of running a marathon in every country of the world. How's the progress coming on that goal? What are the logistics going to be like?
It's moving along. And the plan now is to start in November of 2013.
Okay.
And finish with the New York City Marathon, which is always the first week of November in 2014. Mm-hmm. I'm working with the State Department and the UN to try and get, you know, passports and permits into all of these countries. And, you know, my sponsor, the North Face, has been an integral partner in helping me get all this together because we're working with a firm that coordinated the Olympic torch run around the world for a lot of the logistics. They're doing a lot of the planning and the coordination for the logistics. And to me, I really like getting, you know, engaging and getting involved in the back end of putting this all together. I mean, as well as running, to me, the kind of the elements of how we're going to pull this off is really fascinating. So it's a challenge, just like ultra running a 100-mile race is just getting this thing lined up and being able to pull it off. And I really like that challenge equally as much as the running itself.
Yeah, that'd be a logistical masterpiece when you guys pull that off. I was thinking about when you run in the Vatican City, you'll have to run on a treadmill that whole time, I guess.
I think that's a plan. I'll be running around in circles, very tight circles, right? Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think the beautiful element of this is that I'm going to invite people to come out, especially the local country people, to come out and run with me. Mm-hmm. You know, either run, if they want to run the whole marathon, they're certainly welcome to, but I would say, you know, just come and run as short or as far as you want to run. And this is kind of an invitation to your listeners and to the both of you. You know, pick a few countries and come join me. It's going to be a lot of fun.
How about Italy, France?
All the countries. You want to
no, you want to go to Fiji and, yeah, Tahiti. You want to do all the exotic islands in the South Pacific. Yeah.
You're going to have to kind of work it. I mean, I imagine that some of the countries so that weather-wise – it, you know, it all kind of jives together. Some places being extremely cold and some being, you know, horribly hot. I suppose there's some sort of science behind that too.
Yeah, I mean, logistically, you know, we're going to take advantage of the, you know, the summertime in the southern hemisphere and likewise in the northern hemisphere. But you know, it's impossible not to avoid some of the brutal weather, both the heat and the cold. And again, it's great having a sponsor like the North Face that specializes in, you know, I sound like I'm an ad here for the North Face, but, you know, they've got such great technical wear just because of their, you know, their mountaineering heritage. So, I'll be able to stay warm in these colder terrains, which are going to be a lot of, you know, especially when you get up into Nepal and, you know, some of the Himalayas in that area in central China. I'll be able to use some of the technical clothing to take advantage of the warmth.
That's awesome. Now, how do you decide which challenge to take on next? I mean, do you have a bucket list, or do you just go with opportunities that come up?
You know, it's kind of this motto of never stop exploring. I mean, I just kind of dream big. One time I learned of this 50 marathon club. I was talking to a guy at the Big Sur Marathon. He said, this is my 50th marathon. I'm a 50 stater. And I said, what's a 50 stater? He said, well, there's a club of us that have run a marathon in every state of the union. And I thought, that's amazing. I would love to do that because I love to travel. I love meeting people. I love seeing new things. And I said, how long did it take you to run a marathon in every state of the country? And he said, I've been working on it for 6.5 years. I thought, whoa, I do not have 6.5 years. I got a job. I got a family. I've got about 50 days. So I set out to run a marathon in every state of the country in 50 consecutive days. And that was just such a great experience. And from there, it's just, the idea of taking on greater challenges has just blossomed. And I just say, dream big. Dreams can come true. And this is my latest dream, is to run a marathon in every country of the world. And let's see how it goes.
Well, if there's ever a marathon on the moon, we can all count on Dean Barnett being there.
The space station, right?
The space station, yeah. Zero gravity. You wouldn't have any pain in your joints, right?
Yeah. Well, it's been great talking to you. We've got one more question. There are people in our audience that have run ultras, and there are also people working their way up to the 5K distance. And no matter the distance, we know the mind is important to the success of a runner. So when someone's body is telling them to stop and their mind is telling them to stop, what practical advice do you have to keep going, and where do you dig for that last bit of motivation?
Well, what I tell people is be in the moment. Be present. Don't get ahead of yourself. And so many people, especially when you're running, say, a marathon, you get to mile 18 or 19, and you are hurting. You're really dying, and what you're doing is you're looking for the next mile marker. You're saying, where is number 19? Damn it, I've been running for so long, this mile's never going to end. Oh, there's 19. Okay, where's 20? Where's 20? And it just exacerbates the suffering. I tell people, be present. Be in the moment. Put on the blinders. Don't think about the next mile marker. Don't think about the finish. Just think about putting one foot in front of the next to the best of your ability. Really get that granular. Take a footstep and say, my next footstep's going to be my best. My next footstep's going to be my best. Don't think about how much is left to go. And that's kind of counterintuitive, because a lot of people say, well, I try to come up with a mantra, or I try to put my head somewhere else. To me, that doesn't work. It's a patch. And, eventually, we're pretty smart, right? Your mind comes back to the fact that, oh, I'm just trying to think of something else because I'm hurting so badly right now. I just say, think about it. Think about the hurt. Think about the pain. Be present. Sense everything. And it's amazing how that'll get you through low points. And that, that works whether it's a 5K, a marathon, or an ultra marathon.
Good advice. Well, we've been talking with Dean Karnazes. His new book is called Run, 26.2 Stories of Blisters and Bliss. Dean, is there somewhere on the internet where people can check you out? Do you maintain a blog anywhere or have a website?
Yeah, if they just go to ultramarathonman.com. I've got a website there, and there's a lot of the practical tips and some advice and suggestions. And a kind of a list of my favorite gear and so forth is all right there. So if you want to read more, just go to ultramarathonman.com, and there might be some information there that can help you.
Excellent. And we wholeheartedly recommend the book to all of our listeners. And after reading the book, Angie's so fired up, we're going to sign her up for an ultramarathon now.
You're on the record. All the readers heard it. So we're gonna hold you to it and listen to how things go.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks for having me run by. I look forward to seeing you down the road.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Dean Karnazes. Angie, I don't know, were you like totally stoked that we got to talk to him or what?
I was so excited. I mean, I had read his first book, Ultra Marathon Man, many years ago, and he's, been a personal hero of mine for a long time. So I read his newest book and was really excited about it and really happy that we got to have him on the podcast.
You know, what's funny is that book, Ultra Marathon Man, was given to you by like some non-running family members, right?
Yes. They were like, hey, this is about a guy who loves to run like you do, and here, read this. And they had read it first, actually. So, you know, Dean has really inspired a lot of people, and I know that he'll continue to do that.
So now it's time for the MTA Quick Tip. And on this episode, Angie's going to answer a question sent in by a listener about post-run refueling.
Yeah, you've probably heard on this podcast that a recovery drink helps replace your muscle glycogen and also helps rebuild muscle tissue. However, you may have wondered about the timing of your post-workout recovery drink. So here's a listener question that addresses that issue. Jordan says, I love your podcast, but I've always wondered about fueling after a workout because I tend to cool down and stretch for a long time after a run. When does the 30-minute window for a recovery drink begin after a run? Does it start immediately after I finish running, after my cool down, or after my stretching exercises? I'm sure that question has crossed many people's minds. What you do in the 30 to 60 minute period after a hard workout or a long run can make or break your recovery. So it is a priority that you get a combination of hydration, carbohydrates, protein, and electrolytes back into your body. So to answer Jordan's question, I'd say that the window of time starts when you finish your strenuous exercise. So do your cool down, have your recovery drink, and then do your stretching routine and shower. It's really easy to mix up a recovery drink if you end up at home after running. And during the times when I do a track or a hill workout, I take my Hammer Recoverite powder with me in a shaker bottle. And then after my workout, I just add the water, shake it up, and drink it as I drive home. Then I'm ready for a post-run meal after my shower. And that way I don't miss that critical window of time. Now, if you're doing a run of 60 minutes or less, you probably don't need a recovery drink. However, I definitely recommend it for things like hard speed workouts, long hill sessions, weight training routines like P90X, and long runs. Research has also found that low-fat chocolate milk works well as a recovery drink, although some people don't digest dairy very well, or they're put off by the high-fructose corn syrup that it can contain. Trevor and I use the Hammer Recoverite, and I've really noticed it significantly decreases my muscle soreness when I use it after a long run or a hard workout. A good vegan option is called Vega Sport Recovery Accelerator as well.
And we'll post Angie's answer to this question and a link to Hammer Recoverite on our website, as well as excerpts from our conversation with Dean if you'd like to read through it and leave some comments. We always enjoy interacting with people on the blog, and if you leave comments, we'll definitely respond. And while you're on our website, you can download a free audio gift called The 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training, as well as sign up to our MTA newsletter. I want to thank you for listening to this episode, and remember, you do have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way.